It was my biggest mistake, I would say.
Which is what?
Doing it myself. Manufacturing, engineering, not getting the expertise and not asking for help. I did it all myself, and I, you know, it was great to learn all these mistakes, and I'm stronger for it, but I also, you know, lost probably a year in the process, and it was a painful year for sure.
Welcome to ProCo 360. This is the show about entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. As a listener, you know that sometimes more can be accomplished mountain biking with a client or enjoying craft beer with colleagues at the office, and always with a view that makes us proud to be in Colorado. Past shows, my Audible book list, and newsletter subscriber sign up are available at proco360.com. Subscribe to the podcast via your app. Just search ProCo 360. And today I'll be visiting with David Barnett, who's the inventor of PopSockets. And a lot of you probably know about this product. It's a simple product you can attach to a smartphone to take selfies easier, stabilize your video, or use as a stand. We'll learn more about that. Also, Brad Montan is VP of Results, and he's joining us today, too, from PopSockets. Look, at the time of his invention, David was a philosophy professor. We're going to talk. David, you were, right? That's not.
Yes.
So David's here with us. Say hello to Brad. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Dave.
And he was a philosophy professor, proving that anyone can have a great idea, right? But a great idea only works if it's launched and launched successfully. So we're going to talk about that whole notion. David invented PopSockets in 2011, launched it in 2012 in Boulder, and funded it with a Kickstarter campaign that really you brought to life with this crazy video. And we're going to talk about that too and how that works with Kickstarter. I even have a clip. We'll play a little bit of it, the audio portion. So PopSockets now, you told me before we even started our interview that you sold millions. Millions.
Yes, we've sold probably 5 or 6 million.
Yeah, right? and they're flying off the shelf. So this is today's conversation is really a deep dive into the journey of how someone, you know, with an idea for a product that solves a problem actually took that dream to reality and to fruition. Before we even started, we've been here playing with PopSockets, and I had the privilege. I'm sure most of the listeners now kind of know what a PopSocket is or have seen one, but I had the privilege of having the founder install one on my phone. And how long did it take?
Probably took 30 seconds.
30 seconds, maybe. Yeah. And that included opening the package. So go ahead and let's start by just describing a PopSocket and what it is and what it does.
Sure. I thought it might be fun to start off just with the sound of a PopSocket. If we can catch that.
Yeah.
That's the PopSocket sound. That's the sound that I hope all teachers get tired of hearing pretty soon in classrooms around the country. And that whoever's running meetings and all of the office buildings, those people get tired of hearing the sound too.
Well, they're perfect for fidgeting too.
Exactly.
But yeah.
People get addicted to them for fidgeting. So I would describe it as it looks a little bit like a silver dollar when it's on the back of your phone.
It sticks to the back of your phone, right?
It sticks to the back of your phone with a repositionable gel. So you can move it around again and again. You can wash the gel if it gets dirty. And it expands and collapses by an accordion mechanism that's patented. It expands about an inch out from the back of your phone, and it's about an inch and a half diameter. Mm-hmm. So it's a little circle. Mm-hmm. We decorate it with graphics. We use different materials for the PopSocket. So you can get an anodized aluminum one to match your phone.
Oh, really? That's one I needed you to bring. But I could,
sure.
And so I've seen you as you use it, you wrap your fingers around it and use it to hold and position for selfie. Or you've positioned mine now. I'm using it, as like a little bit of a, what do you call that? I don't know.
There's different stand modes. So you have a shallow portrait mode right
there
now.
There you go. All right. And so I can watch the timer on my phone while it sits on my desk, right? So,
So people get addicted to them for the grip, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that attracts people to the PopSocket. Most people think they can hold their phone just fine.
Yep.
So typically it takes a friend who's addicted to a PopSocket to convince someone to try one. Once you try one, you're not going back, though. So people report, including myself, not being able to hold their phone without a PopSocket. Once you use it for a couple of days, you just don't know how to grip your phone, and you don't know how they even made a phone without one of these.
And I notice you, as you're talking, you're holding it that way. I'm like, this is so awesome, because the founder and the inventor is actually, using it just the way you want it used. Clearly, it's part of your being now, right? So how did you first come up with the idea of creating a device that you could fix to the back of your phone and then hold it better and use it in more functionally?
Sure. So there's a bit of evolution here. I started, I think, in 2011. I have a vivid memory of being in my kitchen pulling my earbuds out of my pocket, tangled. I always used earbuds to talk on the phone. I was tired of untangling them every time I wanted to use my earbuds. So I got in the car and drove down to Joanne Fabric in Boulder and started looking for solutions for this problem I had. First, I glued a large button, about a 2-inch diameter button on the back of my phone with a little spacer, tried to wrap my headset around it. It didn't work because there's a 1.5-inch microphone on the core that prevented it from wrapping. So I had the 2-button insight or solution and glued two massive plastic buttons, clothing buttons, to the backside of my phone.
And they looked beautiful, I'm sure.
Yeah, I got made fun of by friends, family. Yeah.
Hey, if you've just joined me, I'm speaking with David Barnett of PopSockets. He's the inventor and the CEO now. And this is cool because we're talking about the original idea, right? And how you started, I guess, the prototype with these buttons that you bought and glued on the back. So what happened next?
I had no intention of ever bringing it to market. It was just a solution for myself, and I was very happy with it. So I wrapped my earbuds around these two massive buttons that were glued to the back of my phone. I got laughed at. I love to say that I had success despite having no support from family or friends who all laughed at me. There were a couple of exceptions through the way, and these people love to say, remind me that they were an exception and said, back in the day, they thought this had a chance. But
I'm happy to acknowledge that I was not one of those exceptions. I laughed at him. The buttons looked ludicrous on the back of his phone.
I got made fun of plenty for it, but it worked. So my earbuds were never tangled again. And I just started, thinking of better ways to implement the solution so that I didn't get laughed at. And I started considering ways to get the buttons to expand and collapse into a case and have them collapse flush into a case. And started tinkering with different mechanisms.
Was this just something that intrigued you that you couldn't? I mean, at that point, you weren't even thinking about inventing a product that would sell millions, or were you at that point?
No, I wasn't.
You were just consumed with this notion of tinkering to find a perfect solution for your particular earbud tangling problem.
Yeah, it was all about the solution. Did not have in mind the idea of taking it to market until I came upon this accordion mechanism finally.
Let's continue with our conversation with David Barnett of PopSock, as we were talking about how you invented it, and really that it was an unintentional invention. You were simply trying to solve a problem of tangled earbuds, right? And then tell us about this accordion thing that you figured out.
So I was looking for different mechanisms to allow the PopSock to expand and then collapse flush into a case, and I had something in mind that I had seen. I had seen it somewhere over the past few years, couldn't put my finger on it. And an engineer at the University of Colorado, when I said to him, there's something out there, it's made of a single material, it doesn't have any parts, it expands and collapses. I've seen it somewhere. And he said, go to REI, camping section. I went to this camping section.
The cups.
Exactly. And they've got the expanding, collapsing cups. As soon as I saw it, I said, that's it. That's the solution.
Wow.
I just need to miniaturize that, which turned out to be far more difficult. Given the principles of the accordion, it's difficult to scale them down
Once you decided, though, okay, here's your model, you've seen it, and you decide, okay, now at that point, did you say, look, if I'm going to screw around anymore with this, I really need to make it into a product that I can sell?
Yes.
Or were you?
That was the moment right there. I saw that, I thought, and I bet I could sell this
if
I produce this case. Yep.
How long did that journey then take from the standpoint of, okay, I've seen these, well, just describe the journey in a couple of minutes of seeing what was sort of the model of where you wanted to go to turning it into a prototype that actually worked.
It was a tough journey. So I have no training. I have no engineering training, no background in product development. My first inclination was to go find an engineering student to help me start designing this accordion mechanism and try to find somebody to prototype it. That lasted about 2 weeks. This student did a couple designs for me. It was so frustrating having to wait, 2-3 days to get a revision that I just bought the software and taught myself how to do it myself.
Really?
So I could make the revisions in real time. It's called SolidWorks.
Yeah, of course.
A 3D.
All the engineering students and engineering professionals use it. Sure, sure.
So I am the world's leading expert in accordion design in SolidWorks. That's all I can do. I have no other skills, but I can make really good accordions.
But it's the materials too. I mean, the idea is, look, I'm popping this thing in and out and I'm doing it repeatedly. And How many, you must have tested it for how many times you can do this, right?
It's a minimum, we have machines that test
right,
them.
Exactly.
So a minimum of 13,000 cycles.
Before, and it'll last at least 13,000 cycles.
Yeah, the machines heat them up, so really it should be, you know, tens
much longer.
Of thousands,
yeah.
right, 30, 40,000.
Right, so how did you, because the materials themselves are a lot different from designing it in a software package, right? You also have to get materials that will be durable enough and flexible enough. How'd you figure all that out?
Yeah, that's very insightful. That was the big challenge, is materials. So it's also a challenge because prototyping materials are very different from injection molded materials, which
well,
is
sure.
what you use in production.
If you 3D print something, it's not going to bend, right? You
no.
can't
and
test
the
it. Yeah.
The flexible materials that are available in 3D printing are like marshmallows, which is not what you want for an accordion.
Yeah,
it doesn't have the spring.
Right.
It needs to spring back. So I ended up using a cast urethane. And I found it through a prototyper. It was painful. I found it through a prototyper in China after going through probably 30 or 40 other materials that he was calling by one name that weren't actually that material, which led me astray again and again.
How long did that process take? And by the way, before I let you answer, I want to remind our listeners that we're speaking with David Barnett of PopSockets. He's the CEO. He's the founder of PopSockets, joined, of course, also by Brad Montan, who's the VP of Results. We're still talking about the inventing process, though. So you went overseas. You tried to find somebody to find the perfect material. That seems like it would be an arduous. And I mean, you could test it for a long time and find out that it's the wrong material, right?
I did test it many times, and I had a you know, I went astray many times because I was led to believe that we were using certain materials, polypropylene, for instance, or polyethylene, and I crossed those off my list as candidates because I would receive these prototypes, and I think, oh, that doesn't work. It took me 6 months to realize that's not the material I was actually getting. They were using some other material that they would call polyethylene or polypropylene, and it sent me off on the wrong trail
this
again
is
and again.
Probably an illustration of how a first-time inventor probably has a lot more challenge than somebody who's done this six times. I mean, if you were to invent this again, all these lessons, right? I mean, you could speed up the process tremendously.
So much. It was my biggest mistake, I would say.
Which is what?
Doing it myself. Manufacturing, engineering, not getting the expertise and not asking for help. I did it all myself. And it was great to learn all these mistakes and I'm stronger for it, but I also, lost probably a year in the process, and it was a painful year for sure.
And probably a lot of money, too.
And a lot of money, too, yes.
I mean, how you had to decide at some point, it's like, okay, I'm going to try to turn this into a product. It's going to be past, like, it's going to be more than a fixation, and it's going to be more than a novelty. So how much money did you actually have to come up with before you ended up with a product that you said, okay, this is it?
So I have no experience starting a business.
Right.
I had no plan in mind, and I just started, burning off my own savings as the expenses came without any plan at all for what would happen when I ran out.
The bills came and you paid them, right?
Exactly.
That's it, yeah.
Paid the bills, ran out of money, had a Kickstarter campaign. I did not raise a lot of money there.
We're going to talk about that.
So
we're going to talk about that quite a bit. But
okay.
All right, so when we – but still from idea to – prototype that was ready for manufacturability or manufacture. How much money do you think you put into this?
I'd say that was 1 year and, that's not the expensive part. 1 year and maybe, $15,000. The prototyping
really?
Isn't that expensive. It's once you start building molds for production and the molds are, they need to be thrown in the trash again and again. That's when it gets expensive.
Well, yeah, molds are in thousands of dollars each, right?
Yeah. So depending how complex it is.
But really, $15,000 to come up to a product ready to manufacture is really not a bad, it's not that steep. The time itself, I would think.
I should correct myself. That's just for the accordion mechanism. The original product was a case. It was an iPhone 4 case with two pop sockets that expanded and collapsed. So that's what you'll see in my Kickstarter campaign. That actually was quite expensive to develop because I hired a company to help me develop the case part of it, the body. Out of Silicon Valley, I hired a fancy design company.
Oh,
that was
wow.
quite a bit of money. That was probably $100,000. Yeah,
and that was the wrong move. As it turns out, your product wasn't the case at all.
I wouldn't have done anything different, given that I got where I am today. So that company, they introduced me to certain people who helped me find factories. They also. Helped me develop a case that I ended up licensing exclusively to a big casemaker, Casemate, who ended up sitting on this technology for about 9 months, breaking my contract, not delivering, Sounds like a tragedy. Wow. In fact, it was a blessing.
Because then you could have your own business.
I could have my own business, but also during those 9 months, I could develop the real winner, which is this pop socket, the standalone pop socket. I would have never had time to develop it.
So let me ask you this question, because probably everybody listening to the show has come up with an idea, and there's always this question of, do I make it myself, or do I, like, you could have gone, as you did, to Casemade, or to our Colorado company, Otterbox, and said, you know, I've designed this, and here I own the drawings, I own the concept. Do you want to license it?
Right.
Why'd you choose to make it versus license it? Or did you even think about it?
I did think about it, and I actually didn't choose that. It's where I am today, but I chose to license it a few times. So I pitched it not only to Casemade, I pitched it to Otterbox. Mm. You know, they loved it. It just wasn't, didn't fit with their brand.
Yeah.
And my thinking back then was that it's much easier to just hand this over to a company that knows what they're doing than to go it alone. And fortunately, those opportunities didn't work out, because I'm in a much, much better position today than I would have been had I licensed it. And perhaps the product wouldn't even have been successful had it been attached to a utility brand rather than, you know, what we've created, which is a lifestyle brand that puts out graphics that are appealing to different demographics.
You know, that's probably a good place to transition. And I want to come back perhaps during this conversation about the inventing process and so forth. And if you've just joined us, I'm speaking with David Barnett, the inventor and CEO of PopSockets. And PopSockets, of course, is the device that you attach to the back of your phone and then can hold it more steadily for selfies or for video, or can use it as a stand, as I am right now. And joined by Brad Montan, who's his VP of results. We're going to be speaking with Brad a little bit later as we talk about, you know, the results that you're achieving. Let's back up just a little bit in this segment. Let's talk about that Kickstarter campaign. I want to play Pop One. The thing that you got, you did get a lot of crazy recognition because you made this crazy video to launch your Kickstarter campaign. I want to play a bit of it right now, and we'll go from there.
Sure.
It's almost like I'm dreaming.
Thank you for this Nobel Prize. I invented Pop Sockets.
Provide the freedom to text, scroll, and video with one hand. The freedom to carry a headset tight and untangled without blocking your screen.
I hate that!
With Pop Sockets, we can all live the dream.
There you go. Well, that's just a small clip of it. Part of the video, too, I'll tell our listeners, is you doing these goofy dances around your office or something of you talking to your mom. I mean, where did that come from?
That came from the days when I had free time, the fun days when I could be creative. Those days are returning now that I have a team. But I had some creative energy. I had no interest in creating a typical Kickstarter campaign. In fact, I thought it was rather, you know, entertaining how cookie cutter the Kickstarter campaigns were at that time. It's usually two guys, roughly the same age, you know, they're in their late 20s, who sit down on a bench and start describing to you their idea, and then you cut to footage showing the development. It was just so scripted and boring. I thought that I wanted to try something new.
Well,
and more fun.
You know, I think of what did your students think? You're their philosophy professor. You know, that's what you were doing at the time for a real career, right? You being a philosophy professor. And here you are doing this goofy Kickstarter campaign, dancing around and stuff. You must have gotten feedback from them, right?
Students loved it. Some people hated it. I got something close to a death threat, I would say, on Reddit. Somebody said, "I want to kill that guy," in all caps. And I had plenty of feedback. I don't know if you've seen, you know, on the web, the sort of feedback I got from bloggers and the media, you know, titles such as "Great Product, Ill-Advised Kickstarter Campaign." And they would say, "This was a big mistake. He should not have done that. Nobody should be dancing in their campaign." It really bothered the nerds and the techies.
Did it bother you?
It didn't bother me at all.
Wow.
No, it got me, you know, no press is bad press was my view. Well, and this got circulated around the world very quickly within a few days. So,
and did you? And you said you raised $18,000.
That's my memory.
What were you hoping to raise?
It wasn't so much about the money. I think the goal was maybe $12,000.
Mm.
I'm guessing here a little bit. It was a few years ago. It was mostly about the marketing opportunity and the opportunity to get feedback from some supporters. on what they wanted in the case and what kind of pop socket they wanted. Yeah.
Was your model one that when they invested in the Kickstarter campaign, they would get a prototype, they would get a product?
Yep. They were promised a case. I think initially they were promised
a case,
an iPhone
not
the,
that's
4.
Right.
Yeah, this didn't exist, the standalone product. Mm-hmm. What happened was that during the first few days of my Kickstarter campaign, I licensed it to Casemate and I offered refunds.
I'm currently visiting with David Barnett, who's the inventor of PopSockets, now the CEO. The PopSockets is a simple product you can attach to a smartphone, and he's sold millions of them, millions. And also joined by his VP of results, Brad Montan. We were talking until now about this whole process of inventing PopSockets and licensing versus selling directly and so forth. And then your Kickstarter campaign. When you thought about how you wanted to sell the product, I mean, you had to think about pricing and margins and so forth, right? What went through your mind as somebody who really didn't know, you've already admitted on this show earlier that you don't know what you're doing first time. How did you come up with pricing?
So with zero experience,
what does it sell for now?
And family, a standard pop socket is $10.
All right.
We have an aluminum for $15, a wooden for $20, I believe.
Got it. And some customized products. Yeah, we can talk about those too.
Custom upload for $15. Mm-hmm. I think the original price, we sold pop sockets as a pair to begin with, maybe for $10. Mm. The pricing's come up quite a bit as our costs have increased because we're embracing the personalization and the far wider offering than we anticipated with hundreds and hundreds of graphics that we offer. And I think the customers, they appreciate that, and they're willing to pay $10 for a single pop socket is what we've found. And our retailers need that margin too. It's hard for them to sell an $8 item. And in fact, T-Mobile, our first big partnership, passed on pop sockets the first time because there just wasn't enough margin for them. They couldn't do it until we raised the price.
And so the first price you came up with, sounds like it wasn't all that scientifically derived. You basically asked people, everybody you knew, what they'd pay for it.
Some anecdotal evidence, yep.
So what was it more than it cost you?
I mean, quite a bit.
There was
plenty of margin. That wasn't much of a concern.
So that wasn't it. Yeah, yeah. But once you started expanding in channels, like as you mentioned, retail phone store channel and so forth, there's a practical aspect where unless there's a certain amount of margin, not just margin percentage, but also a certain amount of dollars, it makes the transaction worth it.
That's right. So you're selling to a typical independent buys a product for half of what they sell it for. Mm-hmm. So we'd sell it to them for $5. A big chain like T-Mobile has more leverage and they also have more expenses. So they buy it for even less than that. Mm-hmm. They have to cover their costs. They have to cover the cost of paying commissions for their sales representatives. And you can see pretty quickly how a $10 item dwindles in margin.
Well, it becomes uninteresting to them because making $1 or $2 on an item at the end of the day, who cares?
Yep.
Right? It's just not that interesting. So I could see where that has shaped how you've packaged it. And I think, isn't that why some companies will package two or three or quantities, whatever, because it's about the transaction too.
And that turned out to be a bad idea for us when we sold pairs. You know, part of the motivation was to bundle them to get the price up, but there was a significant increase in sales when we moved from pairs to singles. It just doesn't make sense to buy two pop sockets.
Your sense was that people weren't buying pop sockets because they didn't want to. They only wanted one.
Just slowed down the transaction. I think it slowed them down because they didn't understand. They probably made it more difficult to understand the product, why there were two of them together. So,
and we weren't marketing them as with the idea that you would put two on your phone, in part because we still had that earbud cord wrap idea in the back of our minds.
That's
But we just found that for ourselves, for me myself, for example, I enjoy just using one pop sock on my phone. I found it more elegant. And okay, if I'm enjoying it that way, then more customers are going to as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So there was a transition. It was the kids who figured this out. The college students figured out that one pop socket is all you need. And I started saying, once you go one, you never go back. Huh. I went to one, I remember, and I've never gone back. It's just more fun to play with. It's a lighter feel on your phone.
Well, that's cool. It's also illustrative, again, of that continuing process. In fact, I want to talk about a process here. I'm speaking with David Barnett of PopSockets, also Brad Montan, who's the VP of results at PopSockets. And during a break, or actually before we started the interview, I asked you to install a PopSocket, actually different. This is the click mount, the PopSocket mount. And And you discovered something right as we were opening it up, right? Do you want to explain this?
So this
I think the listeners will find this little story interesting.
Sure. This is called a pop clip, and it's a small U-shaped mount that sticks to a dashboard or a bedpost or a mirror, and you slide your device with your pop socket into this mount. It clicks in and clicks out. When we opened up the packaging, the pop clip came out, and Dave asked whether he could whether it was repositionable. I said, no, it can only be used, you know, once. It's a one-time 3M VHB. And he said, oh, so that would be a shame if it doesn't work the first time. I said, no, but there's an extra VHB pad in your packaging.
That little double sticky pad, yeah.
Exactly. It's just we couldn't find it. So, in fact, the way the packaging had been opened, it was impossible to see both the instructions and the extra VHB pad. And I'm guessing at least half of our customers are experiencing this and not even knowing that they're getting instructions or the VHB.
I know. And you and Brad were going back and forth saying, well, haven't we seen this before? Yeah, we did see this before. Why didn't we do something about it? Yeah, we really need to do something about this. And I thought, this is brilliant. I mean, this is really a great, beautiful, colorful example of just a small product design packaging, in this case, thing that even somebody who's been doing this for a year and a half selling millions, you're still learning and you're still open to finding ways to make the user experience better.
Yes. And things are still not getting done. Important things are not getting done, despite the fact that we've grown from 12 employees just about 8 months ago to about 70 now.
Wow.
I mean, we can't hire fast enough, and yet still we just don't have the bandwidth to fix problems like this. You know, you give somebody the task and priorities end up pushing that task down to the bottom of their list.
Although I'm guessing now that we've talked about it on the radio, that if I talk to you again in a month, we'll have this thing figured out.
It's a guess.
Yeah, it's a guess.
Hopefully.
But I mean, that is part of being a scrappy entrepreneur is that, you know, some of these, go ahead.
Part of it is, I think what you're going to say, accepting less than ideal.
Sometimes.
You have to, you know, people call it a version of the 80-20 rule, but you can't be a perfectionist or you will never be a successful entrepreneur because your product will never be perfect.
Yeah.
And so if you're not willing to accept less than perfect in market to get feedback, your company will just grind to a halt.
Yeah. Again, speaking with David Barnett and Brad Montan of PopSockets, I want to play a clip because I want to shift gears to marketing. It seems like you've got two audiences you're marketing to, sort of the younger set and then, you know, the traditional, you know, technology user. But I want to play Pop 2. It illustrates the younger set. Go for it, please.
So I'm a small person and I have this giant iPhone 6 Plus, and it can be a little challenging texting and whatnot. Whenever I take a picture in the mirror and I'm on Snapchat or elsewhere, you may see this going on. That is my current pop socket. There's a lot of other things you can do with pop sockets. One of them is that you're able to take selfies a lot easier. So you're able to just take that perfect picture of yourself. It stabilizes your hand when you're taking a selfie.
I just laugh. This is a self-made celebrity named Kimberly. And she takes videos of products and things like that. And you've got another really, really big self-made celebrity named Jenna Marbles, who you're selling, right? What's that all about?
So Jenna Marbles, for those of you who are not middle school girls, is a popular YouTube star. And for those of you who are middle school girls or have been a middle school girl in the last 5 or 10 years, you know that she was, you know, the number one YouTuber at one point. She's still in the top 10, I'd say. And she naturally found pop sockets. So we noticed that she was using them. We've been lucky enough to have quite a few celebrities use pop sockets on their own.
Well, I want to talk some more about that. We're almost done with this segment, but this notion of these self-made celebrities and how, as a product retailer, you can align with some of those for tremendous success. When we went to break, we were talking about this teenage phenomenon named Jenna Marbles, one of her videos I saw had like 60 million views.
It was incredible.
And so you decided to leverage that kind of popularity to sell your product. Let's talk about that.
Sure. We noticed that she was using pop sockets on her show, Jenna Marbles, and we reached out to her. She does very few deals. As far as we know, she's only done two deals ever to promote a product. She promoted a pet product a couple years ago. She does not like to commercialize her her brand, but she loves pop sockets, and we work together to collaborate on a series of designs based on her dogs.
Listeners can't see me. I have my hand over my head. I'm just shaking it. This whole notion. I'm going to say this. Go to popsockets.com and you look at this collection from Jenna Marbles. And I guess if you're 13, it's pretty cool.
Surprisingly.
Or if I got the wrong demographic.
No, you're right. But surprisingly, you'll get 30-year-olds buying those too.
Okay.
But it's aimed at middle school girls. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
And Jenna Marbles.
You know, dogs in space. It's her dogs in space. Her dog taking its high school picture, you know, with a green background. It's wearing an outfit that you would imagine somebody taking for their high school portrait.
Oh, how funny.
And Jenna Marbles is just one of many people making videos about pop sockets on YouTube. You can go on YouTube, search pop sockets. You see so many teenage girls, especially, but really? People of all ages, but especially teenage girls, they love to talk about pop sockets on their video blogs.
I played a clip in the last segment, and you said she writes to you. That
woman, Kimberly, Kimberly, her name is something like that. She loves to email me and tell me how much she loves pop sockets and what's the latest deal we could do with her. We haven't really done any deals with her, other than a standard referral program we have where she gets $1 per pop socket she sells through our referral program. Hmm. And her videos about pop sockets, some of them have had over 100,000 views. And she's told me, my viewers love for me to talk about pop sockets. I'm going to make more pop sockets videos.
That's incredible. And so, you know, if you think of, you must have driven tens of thousands of sales through these teenage celebrities making YouTube videos talking about pop sockets. That's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
You didn't initiate that, right?
Not at all.
They were using your product and then became devoted, passionate celebrities endorsing it without even being asked, right?
There's no seeding. It's all organic. We're very lucky. I've heard about many of these videos I haven't seen. Just yesterday, somebody in my company was telling me about the unboxing videos where these girls receive their pop sockets and break into tears, opening a box where they get their pop socket, they pull it out, and they're just like, oh, it's just too good to touch even this thing. God.
That's funny.
There's a series of do-it-yourself pop socket videos that I love. We reached out to somebody who made a do-it-yourself pop socket out of maybe a ping pong ball and something else, telling your friends, you know, if you can't afford a pop socket, you can make your own.
$6 or $10. Yeah,
yeah, make your own for $1. It's an arts and crafts project, which we love too. So
of course they don't work, and they're ultimately going to buy more pop sockets.
You know, we're certainly not threatened by it. It's great for us.
Well, yeah, and so that's one market, right? And so you haven't even gone after celebrities. You haven't reached out. I mean, you haven't seen like Michael Phelps holding a phone with a pop socket waiting for a race or something like that.
Actually, Michael Phelps does. Right?
Oh, really?
We didn't reach out to him, but we have several shots of Michael Phelps using his pop socket. We've got Hillary Clinton.
Really? Are you allowed to use those photos? I suppose if they're public figures.
It's gray area.
But it's, because you can't. Can you? You probably could use candid photos of people on your website if it weren't implying endorsement, couldn't you?
It's gray area. What we clearly can do is provide a link to wherever these photos were posted originally. And there tends to be a convention of on certain social media channels of allowing the reposts without getting upset. But you do need to be careful. I think Brad can mention there was a lawsuit by... Was it Michael Jordan?
Michael Jordan lawsuit where some steak company talked about Michael Jordan in their ad. And it was clear from the ad that Michael Jordan wasn't endorsing the steak. But still, the fact that they were talking about Michael Jordan in the ad led him to sue. And he won the lawsuit, $9 million against the steak company.
So what you could do is you could say these famous people have been cited, have been seen using pop sockets. Yep. And you could list their names and you could link to that photo if you wanted to, right?
And there's quite a few of them. Ryan Seacrest, Gigi Hadid. We love Gigi Hadid. Wow. She appears, so she's a model, up-and-coming model. She's friends with
Kendall Jenner,
who shows up with pop sockets, but she's got a pop socket in, you know, every 10th photo she posts.
So are you going to put them in the, isn't there a bag for the Academy Awards where you can put a product in there?
And we've spoken to the Academy Awards and the Emmys about this. We've talked to them about the idea.
You have to pay to be in it?
It depends what the approach is. Some companies do pay to be in this bag. Our thought was that they give out a pop socket to every attendee on their way in, and the pop socket is the ticket to the after party. They like that idea a lot. So
that would be cool.
Yep.
That would be cool. All right, I'm going to watch for that. Let's shift gears now to a different audience. Yep. And that's the sort of the mainstream audience. I mean, there was the Wall Street Journal called your product, the best compact phone stand. And so let's talk about, and if you've just joined us, I'm speaking with David Barnett and Brad Montan of PopSockets. It's a great Colorado-based product, and you use it. It attaches to the back of your phone. You can use it to hold your phone better, to take selfies, to take videos, or to use it as a stand. So we've got a few minutes left on the show. Tell us about this other audience, this more mainstream audience.
Sure. It's an incredibly wide demographic that we have. So I hear stories of doctors recommending PopSockets to elderly who have hand tremors, recommending them to people with severe arthritis. You know, and we get these emails frequently saying, I can hold my phone now. Actually, a whole hospital in Ireland of people who had experienced head injuries and neck injuries, they all received, we gave them PopSockets in the entire hospital, and we get pictures back with people just smiling and joy that they can hold their phones
now.
So that's one side of the spectrum. The other side of the spectrum are pro athletes who are out, about to injure themselves.
They're
the ones with the PopSock in their hand on the ski slope. These are Olympic skiers, Olympic skaters, extreme sports. We have a fan base in that area too. So it spans, from the extremely active to the less active.
Well, let me ask both of you guys this question then, because ultimately you've got to get your arms around how you're going to market this thing. And is your strategy to just get it in every retail store and let people figure it out, or you're shaking your head, David?
No, we're certainly not. We're not moving to go into every retail store, partly because we don't want to harm our relationships with the boutiques and the independent stores who've helped us get a good start. So we won't be in Walmart anytime soon, for instance.
But they'll create a knockoff, won't they? Although we'll talk about, I want to talk, make sure we don't run out of time before we talk with Brad about this knockoff prevention and so forth.
As far as marketing goes, so far it's been purely word of mouth. We haven't paid, we've probably spent less than $5,000 just toying with some advertising and some marketing.
Isn't that the holy grail, is to invent your own product, not have to pay to market it and sell millions?
It's amazing. So everybody who has a PopSocket that's our marketing team. So it's when you're using a PopSocket in public, it just looks different. So people are apt to ask, what is that, is question number one. And people are happy to sing the virtues of the PopSocket.
Customers are like evangelists for you. And it's not the thing that is so incredibly beautiful about this notion is that it's a simple product, hard to invent, simple to use, to put on and all, and yet everybody wants one.
At times I find it absurd. The language people use to characterize it, Woody Harrelson's wife, we heard, called it a life changer. And that's the kind of language, the hyperbole that people are apt to use, just a game changer.
Wow, Brad,
most amazing thing I've ever had. Yeah.
One of my favorite comments we ever got from a customer was, "Dear PopSockets, please do a better job marketing your product so I can stop explaining to people what this is on the back of my phone."
and you're thinking to yourself, this is awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. So before we run out of time, you've invented an amazing product. Brad, part of your job is to keep people from stealing it, infringing on a patent, knocking it off. Look what happened to Crocs made of a plastic material. There were like millions of them coming out of the Far East that all look similar but are not. Mm-hmm. How are you doing this?
We have strong legal protection for our product. We have strong trademark protection and patent protection. So that's why we're not worried about Walmart selling a knockoff. We don't think that Walmart, is savvy enough that they wouldn't create a patent, sell a patent violating product.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you get on the online marketplaces, international online marketplaces like Alibaba and Taobao, for example, you will find counterfeit PopSockets. And unfortunately, some people in America, sometimes some of them not even knowing any better, will buy those products on Alibaba and then start selling them in the U.S. And it becomes whack-a-mole. There are so many different people selling counterfeit products.
It's interesting. A few weeks ago, I had the CEO of Otterbox, which is a company obviously much larger, much bigger and established than, but still selling a phone accessory, right? And he said, I asked him how much he spent, and they said millions of dollars on copyright and patent infringement kinds of defense. So you guys can't spend that much money.
We will very quickly be spending millions. We're already spending quite a bit. We've hired law firms that work with Otterbox.
Where's that money
they
come
work
from?
With Crocs.
Really? Where's that money come from?
Our bank account?
I mean, do you have investors that are supporting this kind of thing?
I had an early investment a couple of years ago. We were lucky enough to be, you know, have a nice cash flow from a strong online business.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worth the investment to get ahead of this, to not experience the amount of pain that Otterbox, Crocs, mm-hmm. these yep. other big brands have experienced. And they're, you know, they're getting control of the problem. And we are trying to learn from what they've done, which law firms they've chosen, how they've dealt with, you know, counterfeit factories. How they've dealt with the two sides. There's two sides of it, limiting the demand and the supply. So the mm-hmm. supply is coming out of the factories. You want to shut those factories down. And the demand is coming from the online marketplaces, and you want to get those listings down as fast as possible.
Well, there's two kinds, too. From what I learned, is one is that there's actual counterfeit production. Then the other is the genuine production, but goes out the back door.
That's right.
It doesn't get doesn't find its way to your proper channels.
Yep.
And so I'm sure you're dealing with both of those things. So let's talk, your role too, Brad, is VP of results. What other kind of results are you responsible for?
I'm responsible for anything from, driving Barnett to a radio interview and then getting pulled on to talk as well, to, doing collegiate licensing applications. We currently have a license for CSU and CU right now, but of course there are more universities out there.
Are there? Yeah. Wow.
So we're going to start getting, national licenses for major universities.
Hmm.
I was going to say there's always a place for a smart person who gets things done, and that's what Brad is. So he will get, you just know it's going to get done if you give it to him, and I'm not the only one that knows that, unfortunately. Yeah. For me, other people in the company have caught on.
So he gets
plenty of jobs every day.
Well, I'm glad both of you came on the show. It's a great story about this whole journey of taking an amateur, in your case a philosophy professor, who comes up with a really neat idea, creating a store, a product, prototyping, developing, protecting, marketing, the whole thing. It's a great story. And if you've just joined us, you haven't heard the whole interview, make sure you go to proco360.com. You'll be able to catch the podcast. And we've got some great shows in the past, but today we've been interviewing David Barnett and Brad Montan of PopSocket. So glad you joined us. To my listeners, thanks for joining me on Proco 360. This is Dave Tabor. My mission is to feature world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You can help by subscribing to the Proco 360 podcast via your app, and please review the show. Also, by subscribing to the Proco 360 newsletter. You can find that at proco360.com. Thanks again to show sponsors MicroStar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, and Jones & Keller, and to my producer, Luke Woodruff. This show and past shows are available at proco360.com and via your favorite podcast app. Search Proco 360. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing.